Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So, Patrick, we live in a world awash in IP, but is that a good thing?
Well, it depends.
Okay.
I will say that if I had a nickel for every time a Mattel IP was used for talking about gender, I'd have a dime, which isn't much, but it's weird that it's happened twice.
It's 10 cents more than you thought you would have.
Yeah,
had.
Exactly.
So that answer, it depends. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things that really frustrates my students. They'll say, Dr. Austin, what's the answer to this question? And I'll always say, it's complicated.
Yes.
It depends. Last week we talked about The Mandalorian and Grogu. I think you might make an argument that it was IP for IP's sake.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
And as a result, we were both somewhat tepid.
Yes.
In our response to the film. But a couple of years ago on a different version of this program, we talked about Barbie, which I think demonstrated that you actually can do things with IP. It can be both nostalgic fun on the one hand, and on the other hand, it can explore pressing social conversations.
Yeah, and Masters of the Universe, which is what we're talking about today, tries to do what Barbie's doing.
Right.
Maybe isn't quite as successful, but I would say that I would give I'm going to give the film more credit than I will Mandalorian and Grogu, in that at least it's trying to do something more
low bar
with the IP. Yes, it is a low bar. Yes,
absolutely true. I think that the film was not what I was expecting.
Not at all.
When I sat down to watch it, and it doesn't have the same balance maybe that the Barbie film has of social critique and nostalgic fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a conversation to be had about manliness in America.
Yes,
I think, and that's what we'll pursue on the rest of this show. Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
And we want to welcome you to Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of the screen.
It's our second episode in the new video format, and we thought for those of you who might be new members of our audience, we should take a moment to introduce ourselves and maybe explain why the two of us are on the show.
Sure, I'll take a crack at that as quickly as I can. My name is Alan Austin. Again, I'm a professor of history. And several years ago, actually at this point many years ago, I had the opportunity to team teach a class with Patrick at our university where we talked about comic books and the way in which those comic books might help us better understand American history. And that class has really inspired me, I think, to think more and more about the pop culture that's all around us. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with it, probably. But I really do believe that we can explore pop culture to better understand ourselves as individuals and as a society.
And I'm also a professor, but of English, and have been a pop culture fan for going on 40 years now in terms of, you know, collecting and being a fan of Marvel and DC, Star Wars, Lego, Lord of the Rings, you name it, I'm likely to be a fan of it. And has turned that into sort of my professional interest as well, which this show is kind of a spinoff of.
Absolutely. And of course, we have Kara with us today as well. Kara,
hello.
Perhaps you want to introduce yourself to the audience as well?
I will try my best. I am Kara Washington. I am the promotions coordinator here at WVIA. And I've had the pleasure of producing this wonderful podcast for now a second season, as you said, in the video podcast version. And I'm excited to be a part of this with you guys. And I also love pop culture and enjoy talking about it, especially with you two.
Awesome.
We're going to ignore the pause around pleasure, right? We're just going to let that one slide.
You had to kind of seek out that word
I had
for
to
a
think
moment.
About it.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and if you're finding this show a pleasure, it would be great if you subscribed, liked the episode, and turned on notifications so you never miss one. And WVIA Pop Shop is supported by our friends at the F.M. Kirby Center, who we'll be talking with later in the show.
But before we get to the Kirby Center and all of the really terrific stuff going on there, we want to introduce what we're talking about today, which is, of course, the Masters of the Universe movie.
Yes.
So Masters of the Universe is directed by Travis Knight, and we both enjoyed his work on Bumblebee.
We did, yes.
As I recall. And it's inspired by a line of toys created by Mattel, as you suggested in the opening, in the early 1980s. Mm-hmm. I think it was really the cartoon that debuted in 1983 that sort of injected He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Somewhat, though the toy did pre-exist the cartoon.
Right, yeah, but kind of in terms of that massive popular understanding and knowledge. Now, I am a novice in terms of He-Man, but here's my attempt to kind of summarize the He-Man universe as best I can.
I will correct as necessary. Okay.
There's a guy named Prince Adam who has the ability to transform into He-Man whenever times of trouble arise. And it turns out times of trouble arise in every stinking episode of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, because Skeletor is always lurking about trying to steal the secrets of the Castle of Grayskull on the planet of Eternia.
It's just Castle Grayskull.
Okay.
And also the planet is Eternos. Their capital city is Eternia.
Having traumatic flashbacks to our conversation about the Hutts last time. So the film, I think, pretty much follows that as a template, right? Here we meet Adam, who's been exiled to Earth. He's a hapless HR representative who is given a quest of sorts. Can he reclaim his potential? Can he rally a ragtag group of misfit heroes? Can he reclaim Eternia from Skeletor's dominion? I would answer that question because I did, in fact, actually watch this movie, but Kara told me no spoilers.
That's correct.
Yep, that's true. We are in the no spoiler section of the show.
Right. Indeed we are.
So yeah, you mentioned Travis Knight as the director of the film, director of Bumblebee, which is his previous live action film, his only previous live action film credit, which we both liked.
I would say almost loved.
It was a
good Transformers movie.
And, you know, maybe not dissimilar to this film, maybe didn't find the audience that it deserves. Fun fact about Travis Knight, he is the son of Phil Knight of Nike.
That is a fun fact.
Yep. He is also the CEO and lead animator of Leica Studios, which did Kubo and the Two Strings. And he also grew up in a suburb outside of Portland and graduated from Portland State University, which, of course, is the pedigree of many a great person.
Home of one Patrick Hamilton.
Possibly. No, we didn't grow up in the same suburb, but, you know, our trajectories have largely been the same, I think.
I think that's obvious.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you felt you needed to say that out loud. Yeah.
But besides Travis Knight, the film is also a packed cast.
Indeed.
With starting with, and I want to make sure I get the name right, Nicholas Galitzine playing He-Man slash Prince Adam.
That's very well done. I was afraid for you and the pronunciation.
Yeah. Camila Mendes playing Teela. Jared Leto as the villainous Skeletor. Idris Elba as Duncan slash Man-at-Arms. And Alison Brie as Evil Lyn. Those are sort of the marquee names of the show, I would say.
It seems like an all-star cast.
It very much is.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hope is a big Galitzine fan as well.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm unfamiliar with a lot of his work.
I'm unfamiliar as well. Yes. I've had a lot of press for He-Man coming up on my feed lately.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of him and Camila Mendes and the two of them together make a really great pair. And he does have a charm to him, I would say.
I saw a bit where he was quizzing her on Riverdale, and all of the people behind the camera actually knew the Riverdale trivia better than she did.
Okay.
But it really took me back. Yeah. We'll come back to Riverdale when we move along
almost
to
unavoidable.
The next segment of the show, undoubtedly. Yeah, it is a pretty packed cast, and I'm wondering if Kara went to see it, given that Idris Elba, among others, was in
it. That's right. I forgot that she's a big Elba fan.
Right.
Is that a reason why I should go to the theater?
One reason.
I do feel like you've said before that you would go to
like
see
him,
I
did see it. I did watch it.
Okay,
did
good.
You?
I did.
Excellent.
Sure, yeah.
Oh. Ooh, I think Kara, Kara might disagree with us.
I'm sensing a little tension in the studio.
Oh, no.
Masters of the Universe.
Hmm.
So having established that, we want to spend the first section of the show talking about the actors.
The actors,
And the acting. Because this is, I think, actually a harder acting job than it might seem on the surface. Because there's a certain level of camp involved in this. There's a certain level of needing to play it straight enough.
Yeah, I'm going to say,
that
it depends which character you are.
Right, that it feels grounded, and yet campy enough that the film can do what I think it wants to do with the campy elements.
Yeah, because I think Galitzine in particular as He-Man slash Prince Adam kind of has to play it straight for pretty much all of the film. He's not nearly as campy as some of the other characters. Though I would argue that the camp never quite reaches the level that it maybe could have in the film.
This is not Batman 66
level
camp. For sure. But I think there's enough to that it's a pretty light movie.
Oh yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And yet it's still asking some of those bigger questions. So I have some questions. Maybe start with Jared Leto.
Sure.
A lot of people were a little concerned, troubled by his. How do you feel about his performance in the film?
I think I may be in the minority on this.
Yes.
I did not care for his Skeletor.
Interesting.
Yeah. In particular, I did not like the voice. The voice of Skeletor, because I'm kind of stuck on the cartoon where he has, like, the really kind of high-pitched cackle.
Yeah.
And so for me, number one, the voice was too deep.
Yeah.
But also there were several times in the film where, because of how deep it was, I could not tell what he was saying at many points in the film.
I didn't necessarily notice that, but yeah. I didn't have three tweens sitting next to me making a lot of noise in this film.
So. I didn't either, but it was, I just had a hard time following a number of times when he was giving dialogue. Like the words were just kind of a mush for me.
I would say, to his credit, I forgot that it was him
for stretches of the film. There's nothing in it that would make it
in the character that, I did also love the way in which, at one point, He-Man says, "Why do you do what you do? Like, what motivates you?" And we argued about this, or we kind of criticized the Mandalorian for this, that the Mandalorian's a good guy just because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And Skeletor's like, "Well, because I'm a walking skeleton."
Yes.
Like, he's just bad because he's bad.
Because he's bad, yeah.
And I think kind of like winking at the camera in that way.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that I think they do try to go a little bit camp with Skeletor. And I think,
for sure,
particularly for me, the voice kind of stops it from being as successful as it could be.
The voice almost worked for me in that way because it seems so gravely serious.
Yeah.
And yet Skeletor is not.
Yeah, and that didn't work. I really would have liked a closer to the cartoon version of Skeletor, particularly in terms of the voice.
You and the canon, man. It's always the canon,
isn't
it?
It just didn't work.
Authentic enough to my 1983 cartoon. Did you even watch the cartoon?
In the sense that it was on before G.I. Joe came on, which I watched religiously, I would catch, like, the end of the Masters of the Universe. I don't know that I've ever watched an entire episode, but I've seen bits and pieces of many of them.
That is one of the most authentic answers I've ever heard you give.
Yeah,
only because it was right before G.I. Joe.
Yeah, He-Man was never a big draw for me as a cartoon.
No, me either. So, Camila Mendez, I thought, was pretty good in this, actually. And I think you could make the argument that it was her time on Riverdale that had her very well prepared to step into a story of such absurdity.
Yes.
And play it with again, finding that balance of not being too campy and not being too realistic.
I mean, she generally plays Teela pretty straight.
Right. But I think about the Griffins and Gargoyles season, which I think we both loved.
No.
Right?
No, that was a terrible season.
Man, I got to say, I miss that show.
I do not.
Like, once it figured out what it was so good.
Yeah.
But Riverdale is the perfect training ground, I think, in some ways, for an actor coming
to a certain extent, yes.
Masters of the Universe. There's a vibe fit.
Yeah. I think. There is a certain amount of overlap. I mean, Riverdale certainly went camp very, very quickly and very profoundly, particularly as seasons went on.
It's brilliant. You hate it when I talk about Melrose Place.
Yes.
But it took Riverdale a season to figure out it wasn't really a straight murder mystery involving some interesting teens, but it was in fact a parody of all of those kinds of things. And once it figured it out, it was brilliant.
And then,
but of course, it burns out pretty quickly.
It does.
Melrose Place could only do that for a couple of years, and then it was spent.
Yeah.
So how about Galadzin? How did you feel about his performance?
I thought I was pleasantly surprised because based on the trailers and things that I had seen, I did not have great expectations for this film. And a lot of it kind of rested on him and kind of the way in the trailers he came off as very kind of, I guess, wooden would be the word that I would use.
Yes.
And I just had a feeling that, and again, not familiar with him at all as an actor. And so kind of had the sense of like, you know, kind of like Dolph Lundgren in the original film, someone who is not really ready for this kind of role.
So I didn't see the Dolph Lundgren version.
I've seen parts of it.
This was a trailer that massively undersold.
Yes.
Number one, what this film was. Mm-hmm. And number two, I think what this film actually accomplishes.
Yeah.
But
Galadzin does a great job in his role as kind of playing Prince Adam / He-Man as kind of the straight man in the film.
There are these moments, though, we were talking about this before the show, where he's wearing the pink kind of salmon-colored shirt.
Yes.
And it's meant to cover up how ripped and good-looking he is. It was very much kind of a Superman vibe where you had to kind of accept that the glasses make Clark Kent, and when they come off, all of a sudden he's Superman.
Yeah. So, well, even the transformation scene where we see him change into He-Man, after the transformation, I'm like, he looks smaller as He-Man than he did as Prince Adam. Because he doesn't have the shirt, like, clinging to it
as much.
It is
a very Seinfeldian puffy shirt.
And I was just like he does
wearing.
Not, I'm like, throughout the whole, there was one of the things that I kind of enjoy that the film kind of just runs with and doesn't try to explain away or anything. And they're like, yes, we're all just going to pretend that he is not completely ripped and in shape
the
entire time.
The best part of the film is the way they kind of wink away that kind of stuff and say, aren't we really here for just the popcorn and the fun of it? Yeah. So, I know you're a big Alison Brie fan. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should talk about Brie and Elba and what they bring as sort of supporting actors.
Yes. Well, I would say Brie's Evil Lyn is probably the most camp of the film, and I think she is very successful in that role.
I agree. I would have actually liked to have seen her doing more
in the film. She does not get as much screen time as I think she should have.
And I think given her clear talent for the material, it would have been great to see her given a little more space. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the sequel, which is coming.
No, I don't know.
Are the numbers bad?
The numbers are not good.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, no, it's the conversation I've seen is kind of like Bumblebee in that it is kind of considered a bomb.
Okay, we're going to change that.
Let's hope so.
In the next segment.
Give it the pop shop bump.
That's right. So how about Elba? We're running out of time here.
Yeah, but I thought he was pretty good.
I agree.
He was solid.
He's given a pretty pat kind of story.
Yeah.
But he did with it what you could do
with it. Yeah, there wasn't a lot. I mean, he did have some development as a character, but yeah, it was a pretty by-the-number sort of character, I would say.
Absolutely. And all of these characters, of course, pile up together with a bunch of supporting actors as well.
Yes.
To present a film that's actually, I think, more interesting than people might believe, right? Now that we've explored the past of the cast, maybe we can now talk about the cultural politics of the film.
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was not expecting from this film at all going in. Was sort of the idea of how it was going to tackle the issue of gender.
Right. But before we do that, we need to pause for a brief word from our friends at the FM Kirby Center. And we are so happy to have Neil from the FM Kirby Center with us here in the Pop Shop Studios.
I'm so happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, love thanks for joining
the show.
Us.
You guys are doing a great job. I loved the banter last week, especially referring to Mandalorian and Grogu. That was a
Are you a Star Wars guy?
Of course. I mean,
Didn't offend you too much with our sort of lukewarm review of the film?
As someone who enjoys Star Wars, I think it's okay to not love everything. But I'll go into everything wanting it to be like the best thing ever, right? Mm. You're hoping that you're going to see something like, wow, this is great. And if it's not, okay, you know. But I thought that was a great, what would have been the next season of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And it was a very nice movie instead.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So I was at the Kirby last week for the Indigo Moon Brass Band. Mm-hmm. So cool. Reminding me of like what a gem the Kirby is for the community to have. And you're here obviously to talk to us a little bit about what's coming.
That's right. So we're really excited because there's so many announcements actually at once. We couldn't contain it all in one quick thing. So what we did is we made a brochure. Oh my gosh, it's right over here. You can see it's our 40th anniversary coming up. Mm-hmm. So we have tons of shows coming up throughout the summer and the fall, which is amazing. So, you know, we're right there in downtown Wilkes-Barre. And it's an old movie house. It's been converted back in the 80s into a performing arts center. And now 40 years from that point, we've been the FM Kirby Center. And we've been on shows all the time. Even just last night, we had Gary Clark Jr. in. But now we've got such a great lineup of movies and comedians and other shows coming up this summer. I mean, you guys being Pop Shop, I'm sure you would love half the lineup we've got coming. We have a great kids series called the Big Screen Summer Series. Kids 12 and under get to come for free. Mm-hmm. But then everyone, you get to come and see Finding Nemo on the big screen. You get to see Ratatouille on the big screen. All these amazing, great films that, you know, it's called for kids. It's free. And also, it's time and air conditioning away from, you know, what's it called? And it's sun and it's warm and it's air you can wear, as we were saying before.
Yeah.
But there's so many great other shows and opportunities. We do our classic film series. This past month, we had Indiana Jones. Next month, we have Mary Poppins on the big screen. And I'm sure talking about Star Wars before. Mm-hmm. In August, we have The Empire Strikes Back. I hope you guys come and hang out for that one.
Oh, yeah.
On the schedule.
And we actually have some special guests coming for that one, too. So you might see some people walking the streets of downtown Wilkes-Barre guiding traffic and asking for papers and things like that.
Oh, goodness.
Interesting.
Exciting.
Yeah. I think they might have shown up at the Grogu film that I went to.
Ooh, yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. A little scary, too, at the same time. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, but we have so much going on. I encourage anybody, go to kirbycenter.org to find out about all the great shows and events and happenings that we have. And in the meantime, you guys are killing it. Thanks for rocking the
thanks so much.
Out.
Yeah, thank you. We can't thank you enough for the support for the show. Yeah.
Oh, of course. We love it.
Yeah. And we'll talk to you next week.
I hope so. We're also going to talk to Kara.
That's right.
Thanks, Neil, for coming by and talking to us about all the things that are going on at the Kirby Center.
It is always great to catch up, number one, with Neil, but also with just everything that's going on at the Kirby Center. So cool. So we want to spend the second part of the episode, and this is, by the way, the spoiler-filled section of the episode. So if you've not seen the film yet, maybe you want to wait, or if you're like Hope, who likes to read the end of a book before she finishes the book.
I used to do that.
I just think that's kind of
immoral.
I used
to read the last sentence of a book.
You're an English professor.
What's your point?
It just doesn't seem fair.
This was before I was an English professor.
Okay. All right. So have you you've sworn it off now?
This was in my misspent youth.
Okay. So when you read Bartleby the Scrivener, you don't go to the end.
No.
Okay, but you already know that story.
I don't, yeah. Okay.
But you don't do it any, you promise.
No, I don't do it anymore. Right,
because
I haven't
Hope
done it
tends
for a
to
long
do
time.
That. I just I don't think you should be able to do that. Also, Hope said if I mentioned her on the podcast, she'd have to listen to it. So,
and who is Hope?
Oh, Hope is my daughter. Oh, I forget that in season one, Hope was a pretty major player from time to time.
Yes.
But yes, she will show up sometimes, as will Harper. So, who is my oldest child? Although at 26, child seems. We're way off track.
Yeah.
Here's the question that we need to be talking
that
about.
That Wee's doing a lot of work there, by the way.
Well, I mean, Kara didn't keep prompting me with questions that were, no, it's my fault, Kara. So the question we have for the second half of the show, Patrick, is what does He-Man have to say about gender nowadays, especially masculinity? Mm-hmm. Or I think really this is a treatise on manliness in America.
Yeah, it has surprisingly a lot more to say than I would have expected going into the film.
Given the trailer?
Given the trailer, given crazy. Kind of there was no sense for me going into the film that it was going to be anything but like, you know, IP for IP's sake, as we talked about earlier. And
absolutely.
So I was very pleasantly surprised, and particularly the way in which that we've made the connection to Barbie several times already.
Yeah.
It seemed like kind of a compliment to Barbie in the sense that obviously
like that
was very much about kind of a masculinity that was very toxic, particularly towards women. Here, one of the things that struck me about the film was the way in which that masculinity or a particular definition of manliness was very toxic towards men themselves in the film, and that men seem to be struggling with kind of feelings of what they should have to live up to.
100%. And this brings what I've started to believe is like listeners and viewers' favorite part of the show, a mini little history lesson. So last week,
who loves that?
Last week,
that's everyone's favorite.
Hey, you get your fun facts and numbers. I get my history segment. Just very briefly. So last week with The Mandalorian, we were talking about the 70s and the way in which that was a moment in which Americans kind of felt powerless. Mm. They felt like the American dynamic was being lost. I think that you can think of the 80s as, in part through Reagan, a political project to try to reclaim that sense of American dynamism, to reclaim. I mean, Reagan was the one who coined Make America Great Again in a 1980 television ad. So, and I think part of kind of reclaiming that American dynamism in the 80s was reclaiming a sense of manhood or manliness. Mm-hmm. And it's not surprising that a cartoon called He-Man and the Masters of the Universe,
it's very subtle.
It didn't just sort of magically appear. This is why I think pop culture matters, right? It's not just, it doesn't come out of nowhere. It's reflecting the historical context in which it's taking root.
Yeah.
And so I think in that way, this film is very much grounding itself in that 80s attempt to reclaim masculinity and contesting it at the same time.
Well, and you can kind of see that too in the original action figures themselves and the cartoon as well. Because in terms of, you know, their literal physical depiction of masculinity and men, it was very much kind of that 80s sort of hard, manly body kind of even kind of a grotesqueness to it in terms of how, like, swollen the muscles are and things like that.
So Stallone,
which is one of the things that turned me off from the toys to begin with, is that they always kind of had a grotesqueness to them.
Interesting.
But He-Man from the very name is very much based in sort of that, what we would call the He-Man even before kind of Masters of the Universe existed.
And yet the film works, I think, pretty hard to try to undermine it. So we see young Prince Adam at the beginning of the film, again, spoilers starting here, training with Duncan Man-at-Arms, and he's terrible at it.
Yes.
And his dad comes and kind of bullies him and knocks him down. And there's this sense of that's masculinity, right? Mm-hmm. That your manhood is defined by your ability to fight, by your ability to enact violence in the broader world. And I think the film very much then spends much of the rest of its time trying to undermine that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the film in a lot of different ways kind of shows how men sort of struggle underneath the onus or pressure of living up to that image. From
100%.
Even the smallest thing of like his Prince Adam's roommate when he's on Earth, who's literally watching rom-coms every time Prince Adam comes home and immediately has to turn the TV off or switch to another channel because he's a man, can't be seen watching The Notebook and
10
Things Hate About You.
Right.
And even kind of the same thing at the end with Idris Elba's Man-at-Arms, when he kind of talks at the end about how he failed Adam in the past.
Right.
It's because in that moment with, you know, Adam being scolded by his father and Duncan slash Man-at-Arms, you know, he tells him, I think he says, you know, just go walk it off or something like that.
Right.
He has no idea how to support Adam because he, of course, is as much wrapped up in that idea of masculinity as well.
So in a way, that's what we should have talked about with The Mandalorian, maybe, is that he's so wrapped up in a culture that he doesn't know it's wrong to bring Grogu to work with him.
I guess you could take that angle on.
There is this kind of cultural... I don't think...
The film is definitely not thinking about that in the way that Masters of the Universe
super clear about that. But at the end of the film, as all of the kingly statues on the bridge crumble, it's literally, right, the patriarchy crumbling. It's those old ideas about what it means to be a man. Mm-hmm. I loved, for a moment, I thought He-Man, of all people, was going to be a pacifist hero.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, no, let's not fight. What we need to do is let's have a conversation. But this film, I think, also critiques the counter reaction to that masculinity by looking at that HR workplace where Adam works, where they're completely conflict averse and they have all kinds of jargon to talk about feelings, but one wonders if they're actually talking about their feelings.
Yeah.
When it gets like loaded down with all of that. And I think in some ways you can think of Adam slash He-Man in this film as trying to find a middle space between that. Because the truth is he says, let's talk, right? This should be about humanity and empathy and feelings, right? Like but when it doesn't work, of course he's willing to throw down. And by the way, the guy with the neck, his mecha neck. Is there no concussion protocol for superhero films? Like the way that he just like wails away at people with just his head seems like a really bad choice.
In most cases in superhero fantasy type things.
Yes.
The superhero themselves are generally immune from the effects of their powers.
Oh,
so like Human Torch bursts into flame but doesn't actually burn up himself.
This is the first superhero science explanation that we've had on season two.
Yes.
It's very nice to be back. I feel all of a sudden
there's kind of this general unwritten rule that the hero is kind of immune from. It's one of the things that the Avengers and the comics in the Buziek Perez reboot with Firestar being not immune to her powers and that her powers were actually killing her is a plot point that kind of calls attention to how, everyone's just kind of naturally not affected by their powers.
But wouldn't it be his neck that was protected from whiplash and not his head from a concussion? It's his neck that has the power, not his head.
But you've got to assume that it extends to the head.
I shall assume for the sake of actually getting back to the conversation. So as we're talking about how effectively it does it, I'm wondering how you feel. Does He-Man find a middle ground? If I'm right, that the film is kind of positing two extremes, manliness and whatever that counter reaction in HR is. Mm-hmm. At the end, how effective do you think is He-Man, of all people, and Masters of the Universe at kind of presenting a way forward?
It's about as effective as it probably could be in that I think one of the moments that struck me was when during the first battle with Skeletor, when he does kind of fall into kind of that masculine warrior type and sort of blasts with his sword.
Right.
And that's kind of what causes the death of his father. Like the one time where he kind of does slip into that ends disastrously. That kind of gets close to kind of that pacifist sort of angle that you were talking about.
Thinking about collateral damage.
In that, yeah, that yeah. Because he slips into that, he ends up killing his father.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the best that it can do, I think, is have Adam/He-Man speak to the idea of that middle ground. Because right. In the end, it is still an action-adventure movie that has to end with somewhat of a big battle.
It is trapped by its genre. Yeah. And honestly, the question it asks is a really profoundly complicated question for what is a popcorn blockbuster summer kind of movie, right?
And I think it kind of is struggling with that, and it wants to ask these big questions in a genre that doesn't really allow a lot of times for these big questions to be answered.
So I hear you saying maybe we can give it a little pass for not finding a solution to the, you know, how many millennia of human violence.
Yeah.
So that is Kara, you know, gestures, we got to move along. It's time for us to get to the showdown.
Yes.
For Masters of the Universe. We've all three seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a pop or is it a shop? And do we want to let Kara go first since she actually saw the movie this week?
Sure.
I don't have a great answer because I was falling asleep.
The whole thing.
I feel like an answer.
Right, Kara's sorry, like, I fell asleep, so I don't know.
I blame myself because I went to a late showing that I should not have done that. So I need to watch it again.
Okay.
So I will minus pop it.
Oh, okay. The pop minus.
Okay.
I slightly disagree.
Okay.
I think this film is a full-on pop.
Yeah.
There are moments where the humor doesn't land.
Yeah.
And I thought, especially early on, maybe, and that's what put Kara to sleep, that it kind of finds its footing, maybe.
Yeah.
As the plot advances, by the time I left, I think I low-key kind of love this movie.
Yeah.
Because it hits a bunch of things. I think it is that summer blockbuster. Mm-hmm. It's got that kind of action energy to it.
Yeah.
It's definitely a popcorn movie. You can go in and just enjoy it for the ridiculousness of it. There is, I hate to say this, but a Michael Bay-esque kind of aspect to it.
Okay, well, that's insulting to He-Man and Masters of the Universe.
With the product placement and the kinetic, like the hyper-kinetic energy.
Yeah.
But it also is way more thoughtful about manliness and masculinity in America over the last 50 years than I would have expected. I am super enthusiastic about this movie. The more I think about it, the more I like this movie. And if anybody who watched last week, when you said we were going to watch Masters of the Universe,
my reaction
was not an enthusiastic. The film took me from a skeptic to a believer pretty quickly. And I think if you're watching this podcast, you should go see the movie.
Yeah. It's a pop for me as well.
Yeah. But not as enthusiastically? Are you somewhere between me and Kara?
Kind of in the same way. It is by no means a perfect film.
Fair.
It has some pretty big plot holes, I would say, in terms of...
Yeah.
Probably the when they send him to Earth at the beginning to save him from Skeletor and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole idea is that he has to hold on to the sword.
That made me so mad.
But then when he loses the sword, he then has to find it. The moment he finds it, it sends a signal that he has it. I'm like, well, if he held onto the sword, they would have been able to find him like 2 seconds after he got there.
And
the whole finding the sword thing is a bit of a mess. Didn't work for me.
Here's why it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Because the general attitude of the film is that it doesn't really matter.
There
is this kind of... we are doing something ridiculous and absurd, and we're kind of going to lean into it. But
film hadn't leaned into it as much at that point yet.
When he lets go of the sword, I'm like, dude,
you knew that was going to happen.
This is why I hate kid actors. You were told one thing, don't lose the sword. What's the first thing you do? Drop the sword.
In his defense, I'm pretty sure it's because of the friction of traveling through the wormhole that he loses it. And he's a little kid. He doesn't have strong He-Man muscles.
Put two hands on the hilt at least. Come on.
I think he had two hands on the hilt. I think he was struggling to hold on to it.
He wasn't struggling hard enough.
He's a little kid.
Fair. It's a fair point.
So I will give the film credit for what it tries to do.
Yeah.
Over kind of some of the flaws in the film and you know, some of the other things that it may, you know, it doesn't really do much with Teela and Evil-Lyn to think about women in a film about gender.
Right.
There could have been more to do
there.
Well,
maybe the next one, because we do see She-Ra.
Yes, potentially. If we get a next one.
If we don't get another one, it will be a crushing tragedy.
Yeah.
It will be one of the great pop culture injustices of my lifetime.
Yes.
I demand a second film.
Okay.
I thought it was...
I would like to see more of it.
I just thought it was that good.
Yeah.
It's one I'd go back to watch again. So, Kara, if you want to go see it again with, like, a really enthusiastic person...
And you can poke her when she's falling asleep. Like, wake up, Kara. It's a good part.
They're all good parts. But I will say this, and I don't say it to provoke you. There was something about this film that reminds me of the Transformers films that Michael Bay made. No. In the fact that it
has as many plot holes?
Yes, yeah. But there's something about the way the film is made that just shuts off that concern for me. Because there are films that don't do that for me. But this one, I didn't care. It's like I was watching the stupid 80s cartoon again.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that element.
Or at least what I imagined the 80s cartoon. It was like a shut off your brain for that stuff.
It was. I can acknowledge the plot holes, but also I was not terribly, you know, my liking of the film was not damaged by kind of some of the wonkiness of the plot.
Right. So barring Kara having fallen asleep, I think we're giving Masters of the Universe an endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
The Pop Shop endorsement, bringing what Patrick calls the Pop Shop bump.
Yep.
Undoubtedly to week two or three.
Let's hope so.
We can only hope. So thank you again for joining us for this episode of The Pop Shop.
Yes, and thank you again to the Kirby Center for its support of the show.
We really appreciate it.
That's right. And next week, we'll be turning our attention to Disclosure Day, the new film by Steven Spielberg. And we will disclose what we think about that on next week's episode.
And don't forget to like, subscribe.
And don't forget to like and subscribe and turn on notifications so you never miss an episode.
I like that Kara said it and then you echoed it. I think it makes it even more powerful.
Yes.
Like, subscribe.
That's right. You're just underlining it.
Absolutely. Like you can... It's
further emphasize
it. Now highlight it. Let's hope Spielberg can make up for Ready Player One.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
It's got to be better.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.